This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
You can watch us on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page. We're discussing Shedeur Sanders in the comments over there throughout the break. Danny is suited and booted. He's got the shirt and tie bar on. You got a fun little event tonight.
That's right. Hosting the GW Athletic Awards at the Charles E. Smith Center at the George Washington University in a couple of hours.
We're brought to you today and every day by the law firm Kondori & Murad. They're going to help you to draft a will, set up a living trust, or put together a medical power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. Charles Allen, council member in D.C. at 4:30, and your next chance to win Caps playoff tickets for tomorrow night's Game 5 at Capital One Arena is about 16 minutes away at 4:20. But let's kick off the Beltway Blitz. Speaking of the Caps, Sammy Silber, the Hockey News, joins us now. Up 3-1. I wasn't feeling great. Started the third period. They were down a goal. Series could have been tied 2-2, and then Tom Wilson's hit changed everything. Do you think that that was the turning point?
Yeah, I think the entire arena, I mean, they probably felt it and heard it, but, I mean, you can see how a play like that just changes the game, right? It was a clean hit. It was a beautifully executed hit, and, you know, it didn't just, you know, help Washington reclaim possession. It just changed the entire tone of that game, and that's what Tom Wilson does best, right? So it was a huge hit. Obviously gave a lot of momentum and led to four unanswered in the third there. And who knows? I mean, maybe it, you know, set the tone for the next game and maybe this thing gets done.
Alexi Protas, what do we know?
Not much yet. He looks great. He was full go again this morning. He's been full go in practice these last few days. And it seems like he's right there. We don't have confirmation, but I'd be surprised if he doesn't get into the series sooner rather than later.
So walk us through that decision, because if he's ready, you would play him in a situation where you were desperate, but they're up 3-1, so they might feel like they have some wiggle room here. There's also not an obvious player right now to pull out, because Radish, Leonard, among others, have both played really well. Mangiapane just scored the biggest goal of the series. So two-parter. One, like, what do you think goes into the discussion here? And then two, if he were to play, who would get parked?
Yeah, Carberry kind of talked about that because, I mean, it is true. It's, you know, if the lineup's working and things are getting done, what, you know, are you going to upset the apple cart? But no, I mean, Protas, he's shown just how important he is to the team and what he does on the penalty kill and what he does at 5-on-5 and his impact all around. So, when he's ready, he'll play. It's not necessarily a matter of, you know, oh, well, we don't want to do this or do that. You know, Protas, you know, has obviously earned his place as one of the top performers on the team. And so when he comes back, he'll draw in. And going from there, I mean, the decision, a lot of it depends, right? I mean, I think you look at you look at the Caps, you know, needs regarding even strength, penalty kill, you know, who plays what role, and then, you know, you look at position-wise, okay, you know, do we pull, you know, a center and maybe switch that up, you know, do we take Radish out, do we take, you know, Duhame and maybe take him out? It's there's a lot of different factors at play, but a lot of it also depends on, you know, who plays reliable minutes, who plays important roles beyond just 5-on-5. So I think a lot of it goes, you know, starts there and then goes from there.
What's the most important thing for them to do to close this thing out tomorrow night?
Yeah, I think just not get ahead of themselves, you know? I mean, I think Carberry kind of talked about it this morning. This isn't a team that really gets in its own head or overconfident or anything, but they know, you know, Montreal is going to be playing hard. You know, there's a reason that they made the playoffs. They're resilient. They're not just going to go away. And I think if you look at their team, you know, they've had their backs against the wall multiple times this season, have, you know, come back to impress and hang on. And I mean, that's the reason they are where they are. So I think the Caps just need to be consistent, stick to their game plan, stick to the identity, not get wrapped up in the emotions, keep everything in check. And if they do all that, then it should be a recipe for success.
Sammy, thank you. We appreciate you.
Thank you, guys. See you soon.
See ya.
Danny, what do you think of my take that the environment in Montreal and playing there is going to be the most raucous and most difficult faced by Washington, no matter how long the playoffs go, probably? I mean, it was so loud.
It was nuts.
It was crazy. And they got a lot out of it. I mean, that was a tough out. They beat you once, and they almost beat you twice.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, in terms of the atmosphere, it's not going to get better than that. It might be equal somewhere. Or, you know, you have to deal with a better opponent, presumably, if you advance. Like, you have to play Carolina or, you know, Florida or Tampa or somebody like that eventually, God willing. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of the environment, 23,000 or so just heckling you, right on top of you, screaming at you all the time. That's probably the one seed.
Let's talk NFL draft. Nate Davis, USA Today Sports. Nate, whose drafts did you really like? Who left you scratching your head a little bit?
I think my favorite one, Grant, was New England. I think their first four picks were on offense, and I thought they really needed to do some things to help out Drake May in year two. And I like players that they got, particularly Trevion Henderson. You know, I guess Cleveland left me scratching my head just with the whole two quarterback thing. And I mean, I kind of get the trading down from Travis Hunter to get the first round pick next year, which presumes maybe targeting a quarterback next year, which then presumes that the two you just drafted aren't going to be very good. I mean, I don't know. The whole thing to me was a little bit of arguing against itself to some degree. But, you know, I can certainly see why some people really like it. I just think it's one that, you know, let's wait and see at least a year to see where it takes them.
Give me a draft that you really didn't care for. I'm not really sure. You mentioned Cleveland. It was you know, a little bit bewildering, but someone who you think just missed.
You know, Danny, I don't know that I feel like any team completely whiffed this year. I'm also not sure, like, how much quality and or depth we have in this draft. I mean, we'll find out. I think, you know, the one I had rated the lowest was Miami's. You know, I think that they finally drafted some big guys, which I think they need. But, you know, I kind of thought maybe they reached, you know, for Kenneth Grant and Jonas Savina in the second round. So I didn't love theirs. And then they kind of had a bunch of holes from trades after that. So they only had the two guys, I believe, in the first five rounds. So that was my lowest rated one. You know, Carolina's, you know, we'll see what Ted McMillan is. I thought maybe he was a little early. They were another one that I guess I wasn't overly enthusiastic about.
Let's talk quarterbacks. Cam Ward went 1-1. I don't remember a quarterback going first overall who's been talked about less since the draft than Cameron Ward, because there's been so much Shador Sanders banter. But the Giants trading back up into the first round for Jackson Dart. I mean, were there any other of those quarterback picks or storylines that you found interesting in terms of a landing spot where maybe somebody gets on the field or has a chance as a mid or late round pick to have a career that maybe we're not forecasting?
I mean, I think the one that to me is the most intriguing maybe is Jalen Milroe. He's an elite player with the ball in his hands. I mean, I guess the question in Seattle is, you know, are you tempted at all to use him in some kind of a slash role, or do you purely want to get him ready to play quarterback in the future. And, you know, I mean, the nice thing for him is I don't think there's going to be pressure to play this year, even if Sam Darnold reverts. I mean, they've also got Drew Lock there. So, I mean, they've got two guys that have been kicked around a little bit who I think might be more willing to serve as mentors for him. But he won't be rushed. But, you know, he's also going to a place where the head coach, you know, Mike McDonald, you know, as you guys know, spent a number of years in Baltimore. And has, you know, a very good feeling for what that kind of a quarterback can do for your offense and do for your team. So I'm really curious to see what the approach is with him and then maybe, you know, what he is depending on how long it is before he plays.
Nate, what'd you make of what the Giants did? Abdul Carter seems like a slam dunk at three, but then trading back into the first round to grab Jackson Dart. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, Danny, I thought it was, you know, you don't want to say self-serving, but I mean, obviously Shane and Dave are both in the hot seat, but I commend them for selling the fact that, hey, we got to take the best player at number three and it's not a quarterback. Then they come back in and get a quarterback, and it wasn't like a crazy move. I think they ended up giving two low third rounders to jump up from whatever it was, 34 to 25, or whatever that move was. I thought it was perfectly, you know, reasonable. And then, again, you know, another team that doesn't necessarily have to prematurely play a rookie when you've got Russell Wilson, you know, and Jameis Winston there. So, you know, I obviously, you know, the interest they had in Cam Ward is kind of, you know, well known at this point. But I thought it was a reasonably, you know, good approach for a team that needed to get a quarterback. And, you know, if they're bad again, you know, they're going to be in position to get one next year. We'll see if Dable and Shane get that far, but they're also building up a pretty nice group of players around them with guys like Thomas, Andrew Thomas, and Malik Nabers, and Abdul Carter, as you said.
USA Today's Nate Davis with us on our Beltway Blitz. Let's look at running back. So take the first rounders out. Ashton Jeanty went 6 to the Raiders. Amarion Hampton, 22 to the Chargers. We had three running backs go in round two, including the Ohio State tandem of Judkins to the Browns, Henderson to the Patriots, and then R.J. Harvey to Denver. And then the sweet spot seemed to be the fourth round. There were, I think, six running backs led by Bashel Tootin of Virginia Tech that went there. Is there an RB landing spot that you really liked, maybe in terms of a huge rookie year possibility?
Yeah, you know, Grant, and Bashel Tootin, I'm glad you mentioned him, bit of a local guy. I think he's got a chance to do some damage there with the year that Travis Etienne had last year. But the one I'm looking at is Caleb Johnson, you know, third round out of Iowa going to the Steelers. You know, Najee Harris left Pittsburgh and is with the Chargers now. And I'm not really sure Jalen Warren is – I mean, he's never started there. Caleb Johnson's a guy that can, you know, handle a big load. I would look for a big year out of him, both, you know, actual football, fantasy football, plus the fact that the Steelers have some young guys coming back on what's a – should be a young and talented offensive line, you know, with the assumption Aaron Rodgers is going to land there eventually, they're starting to kind of form into a kind of a compelling looking offense there.
Nate, thank you as always, buddy. Talk soon.
Thanks, guys.
We'll see you, bud. Hit that local 53 sounder, please. Jake Thompson comes on here on three, covers Ole Miss to tell us about the new player for the Washington 53 from Ole Miss. Jake, what can you tell us about Trey Amos?
You know, Trey, he's transferring from Alabama. He, played well there for a year, knew Pete Golding and recruiting. Ole Miss got him, and he added a tremendous help to the secondary, which has kind of been a question mark for Ole Miss in terms of, you know, keeping the top from getting blown open on some passes. They still had some of that this year, but his three interceptions tied the team best. 13 pass breakups led the team. He helped out tremendously on the outside, and anybody that got him was going to get a big, big boost in their secondary, and that ended up being Washington.
Seems like there's length here, right? He's 6'1". He's about 200 pounds. He's got the long arms. And what's his style of play? Is he a physical guy? What can you tell us about him?
He's a physical guy. He's not. He'll give a little bit of cushion, not a lot, but he's not really pressed, you know, one on one at the start. But when you get into that coverage, he stays physical on him. He's probably their most physical defensive back in the secondary, I would feel safe to say.
Is it bump and run? Is it kind of man at the line? Is it zone? Where's he best suited in your mind, Jake?
You know, I think it's a bump and run. I think man-to-man's better for him. He didn't seem to do as successfully in zone. He was more sticking with this one guy and kind of keeping him as a blanket. That's where he did best, just one-on-one man coverage.
So the Commanders end up drafting him. For fans who have never seen him play before, what kind of guy are they getting? Did you have any interactions with him, or what type of worker is he?
He, you know, kind of a quiet guy, at least, you know, when we got to talk to him here and there throughout the season or after a game. But he nonstop, kind of full motor guy, especially in the secondary, just kind of full throttle. Like they're going to get out with a lot of energy. And just another addition to what this, you know, the turnaround that this franchise has gotten. You know, offensively, they look great, and they're adding those pieces on defense. And I think Trey is going to be another big addition for them.
Jake, where did he improve the most since setting foot on campus?
You know, I got to say, just getting reps improved him altogether. He didn't play a lot at Alabama. He was kind of in that rotation two-man, so he got to come here and be a starter. And I think just his entire game, just getting to be able to play 13 straight games, life in the SEC every Saturday, he improved everywhere in my mind.
All right, before we let you go, it's not very often. We don't do a lot of college football on the show here in D.C., but we talked to someone who covers the SEC. What's the landscape look like going into next season?
You know, I think Texas is kind of now maybe fighting Georgia for that top throne. It's those two, I think, and then kind of fighting for second, third, fourth place. You know, Ole Miss was kind of in that conversation this year, but they lost a ton, obviously, with eight guys going to the draft and a ton getting a chance at free agency. But I think it's going to be Texas, Georgia fighting, and then seeing who kind of emerges, maybe fighting for second or third.
One of the guys they lost in the draft was the conference leader in almost every passing category, Jackson Dart. 29 touchdowns and 6 picks last year. He ended up in the NFC East, so he'll be throwing passes against one of his former teammates here in the division. What did you think of where he ended up with the Giants, and how quickly could he be ready to play in the NFL?
Yeah, I think he ended up, you know, if he wasn't going to end up at a team that he might start now, I think the Giants could possibly be the best scenario if he wants to sit here, you know, learn under Russell Wilson, you know, see what Jameis Winston can offer him, you know, send him to that learning tree, not have to be thrusted into, you know, immediacy once August camp gets here. He can kind of not have to face that, especially with that New York media, you know, bearing down on him right off the bat. And so, you know, I don't know how much he'd play this coming year. I think it depends on if they're fighting for playoffs. Obviously, Russell, it will be leading the way, but if they're kind of out of it, they may throw him in at the end of the season, see what he's got. But I would look to see that they kick the tires on him sometime in 2026 season.
Jake, great stuff with us, man. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you all.
You got it. Jake Thompson on 3 Ole Miss. Might even be a wordplay thing. Might even be 1 Ole Miss as well, with the 3 as the E.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't even thought of that.
I thought it
was on 3.
I saw O-N-3. But I thought maybe like a backwards E, like 1 Ole Miss.
Because I thought on 3 was a thing.
Well, on 3 is. Like, on 3, ready? You know, like one of those. Although yeah. I will say Jackson Dart only claps once, he told John.
He's Gruden. A one-clap guy?
John Gruden like was so mad because I watched all that Barstool content with Gruden and the quarterbacks. Jackson Dart has never been in the huddle, essentially. He's never called a play in the huddle. He's like, so show me your snap count. Have you ever done a snap count? He's like, but do a snap count. He's like. John Gruden was so angry.
He couldn't have it.
Oh, man. He was so upset. He just, these, you know, it's these young kids, one of those things where he's like, you got to be able to do a snap count, man. That would actually give me a little bit of pause. Never gotten up to the line. Black 80. Check. Kill. Like, none of that.
Never once. Demonstrate it for me one more time. And that was it.
That's what they did.
There's never even a second clap.
It doesn't seem like it. Not according to what he told John Gruden.
Man.
There had to be some dummy claps in there. Nothing. No snap.
Like, you got to every once in a while do the hard clap. Right? Like, it's going to be a snap. Guys, I'm going to clap, but it's a fake one.
It's 20 after. That means it is time to give away Caps tickets. The penultimate pair of tickets were given out. One more opportunity at 520, but caller number 9 right now at 800-636-1067. Tomorrow's game against Montreal, you'll be in the building at Cap One Arena. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com. We're expected to catch up with D.C. Council member Charles Allen next on Grant and Danny.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drill deep to left.
Ohtani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide.
Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Charles Allen, who's a council member in D.C., is going to be calling us in just a moment. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. Ben Standing of The Athletic will be stopping by at 5 o'clock. That is 33 minutes from right now. We'll talk NFL draft and what the Commanders did, a five-player haul for them. I would have lost a ton of money if you told me they didn't trade back at all during the draft.
Same. Yeah.
I would have lost even more money if you would have told me they never drafted an edge. And if you would have paired together zero edges and zero trade backs, I would have bet the ranch, and I wouldn't have a ranch anymore.
Yeah, I'd have lost that ranch. I'd have been like Yellowstone signing it over. Yeah, man.
Still like what they did overall, though, but just an unpredictable draft for them. But let's go to the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, if it the most reliable heating and air conditioning in the DMV. If it ain't Rude, it ain't right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they say, and I agree. Ward 6 council member Charles Allen has been on the show many times before, always very kind with his time when there's big D.C. sports stadium news for us here on Grant and Danny. Council member, thanks so much. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you doing today?
Very well, thank
you. Very well. I think we're on opposite sides of this one. I got to be honest with you. But you're my favorite council member. I'm going to butter you up first because you always
answer our calls.
There's people putting out statements that told us to kick rocks. You always come on and answer questions, and I really, really appreciate
that. Sincerely.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate it, guys.
So let's just start with your reaction to yesterday's news, the press conference, and if anything's changed, because last time we talked to you, you were in the no pile. I'm going to put you in the no pile for this stadium project. Is that still the case?
You know, what I love is that people will kind of be like, hey, what do you think about a stadium? I'm like, I've been asked that question for more than a decade, and it's always been the same answer. I don't think a stadium is the best way to revive that neighborhood. I think there's a better way to build housing and build parks and new jobs and new businesses. There's a lot of ways we could do that. But we're no longer in the theoretical, right? Now we got an actual proposal in front of us. And the thing that gives me a lot of pause right now is that this would be the second largest public subsidy of an NFL stadium since 2009. And we're talking $1.2 billion of taxpayer money. I don't think it's a good deal. Now, I think that if this is going to happen, we've got a lot of work to do to actually get this to be a much better deal for the district and, frankly, also for the fans.
What's that threshold look like for you? So if I'm just, again, we're using big, broad numbers here. So if $1.2 billion is too much, which I think a lot, most people can understand, what's not too much?
You know, I mean, we talked about this last time, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not afraid of putting public money into projects that see the return on investment. I was a huge proponent for Cap One Arena. And you remember, I was out there before we ever went through the will we, won't we scenarios in Virginia, that we needed to put money in. And so I strongly supported the $500 million to go into Cap One Arena. And why? Because an arena generates year-round activity. And that's just not what you're going to see at an NFL stadium. The things that, you know, it's hard to draw a line and say, here's an exact number, right? Because I'm more interested in what's it going to do. So right now we've got, you know, close to $400 million going to build parking garages and 8,000 parking spots. That to me is stupid. Like, think about Nats Ballpark. So those two parking garages by the ballpark when you walk in the center field gate, that's 1,250. It's 1,250 parking spots. If I were to build 8,000 spots, I'd have to have 13 parking garages around the ballpark. And you guys would probably agree that's a really bad idea to build that much parking. So imagine that out now at this future RFK site. I think it's way too much parking. Rather than looking backwards of like, let's just see how many cars we can jam into this space, there's nothing in here for a metro expansion. There's nothing in here to get people in and out by transit. That should be the future. If this is going to happen, there's got to be a lot more investment in Metro and our transit. Get people in that way. 295 is a mess anyway. Mm-hmm. Now we want to add 8,000 cars trying to fix it. That's not going to work.
You guys would own the parking garages, though, yeah?
Oh, this is one of my favorite parts of the deal, though. So we would not only pay to build them, we would own them, and then under the terms of the deal, the Commanders get all the parking revenue from it, from the parking garages that we build and own. That's what I mean when I say this is a bad deal. It's a bad deal for the city right now. There's a lot of elements. If this is something that's going to happen, a lot of this has to change.
Would that parking revenue only be for home football games, or would it be any time like Beyonce comes, or I do stand-up comedy there? I'll probably sell out 70,000, I'm sure. But you know what I mean? Like, is it for any event, or is it for
the night out with Grant and Danny?
Yeah.
When we're bringing in, you know, we're gonna do the Pat McAfee bit, and we go 65K. You guys make that money, or the team?
The team does. So the way it works is that this is a development deal, right? So they're getting that. That's what the term sheet says, is that they get the revenue from all of that. That just isn't fair for DC taxpayers. If we're gonna pay to build this stuff, which again, I don't think we should be building 8,000 parking spots, that doesn't work. Think about another stadium. Think of Wembley in the UK. 90,000 seat stadium. They have 2,000 parking spots. Our ballpark has 1,250. There's no need for 8,000 parking spots. All you're going to do is just create a lot of people sitting in traffic, and then you're going to wall off the stadium, the fields, the river with a whole just bay of parking garages, a whole wall of parking garages. I just don't think that makes a whole lot of sense, and that's definitely not what I want to put your public tax dollars into.
So I'm team parking lots, but I'm not parking garages because I want to tailgate, and I don't think I could do that in the parking garages anyway. But that is a legitimate concern for people is – there's a lot of tailgating in Maryland.
Yeah.
There's going to be very little at this stadium. So that is an issue. All right, I will defer to you on the parking with your information. Here's where I want to push back on the bad deal thing. The Harris Ownership Group is forking over $2.7 billion, way more than I would have anticipated. 76%. Now, I know your point is it's $1 billion that you're spending. But my point is if you compare it to other projects, you know, New Orleans, it was 33% private, 67% public. Tennessee, 40-60. Jacksonville, 50-50. This is 76% private, 24% public. And I know you're worried about the bottom line, but by the standards of what is now sports deals and stadiums and in cities and in the NFL, this is not a bad deal.
Well, so we're all just now getting the details of this proposal as well as the term sheet, right? So let's start thinking about the things that actually aren't included in those numbers, because whenever you do the rollout, you're always, of course, given your rosiest assessments, right? So I talked about all the revenue that we're just giving away. We're also giving away the land. So the Commanders will now control all that land to develop as they like. They're going to pay DC $1 a year. So that's a lot that we are just giving them, and I don't think it's fair to say we're just not going to count that as the public subsidy. That's how they're going to monetize a project and then build a stadium. The other part they're going to do is with this seat license deal. And I get it. It's where a lot of NFL teams kind of do this seat license thing. But for a fan to go to a game, even if the lower price tickets, you're looking at $5,000, $8,000, maybe $10,000 for the license of that before you ever even buy a ticket. So multiply that times 65,000, and you have just raised hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars off the backs of your fans. That's not the team putting the money in. That's you guys. That's the fans, right? All of us that want to go to a game, we're paying for it. So between the $1.2 billion that the city would put in, between the billion or so through all the license fees, that generosity that you're pointing out starts to get whittled down pretty fast.
So I don't know if that's what the PSLs would cost. You may be right. That seems high to me that you would pay that much for the right to have season tickets. And I'm anti-PSL in general, but they are a reality.
Yeah. They are increasingly a reality, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is part of it, right? But I want to go back to the $1.2 billion, because there's really two parts I don't understand here.
Sure.
If you could walk me through this. We had Mendelsohn on yesterday, and he couldn't really answer this. I mean, he was very pleasant, and we had a good conversation. But there's not an answer that I've heard yet that works for me. And my question is, what is your plan that's better for the community, that's going to generate more jobs, that's going to do more good in that location in terms of growth, tax revenue? I've yet to hear one thing. And everyone always talks about affordable housing. There's no housing in the city that's affordable. So, Tag, you're it.
No, beautiful. I appreciate it. All right. So, there are many neighborhoods that we can talk about where we have been able to grow significantly. We've created housing. We've created jobs. But we didn't have to have a stadium to be the anchor. I'm going to pick NoMa as an example. How did we rebuild the NoMa neighborhood? First off, we put in a metro station. So whenever we build transit, you will see housing and jobs follow. NoMa Station is now one of the busiest in the entire metro system. And as that neighborhood built up around the metro station, we now have 15,000 people that call NoMa home. 60,000 people work in that area. We have multiple grocery stores, restaurants that are all over the place. We've got parks, public spaces. When we put some public investment, but also we put in transit, we put in a plan, you don't have to have a stadium to get that done. So there is an alternative. And I know that it wants to be framed as, hey, either you're for the stadium or you're not. And if you're not, you just want to see this empty parking lot and a rusting structure sit there. Nobody wants that. That's why I fought hard for Congress to give us the right to actually develop this thing. I just think that it would be a better development without a stadium, because I think you could look at NoMa or the Wharf or other areas where we have built huge spaces. We've put in public tax dollars into it. I'm not afraid to do that. But we've built out the types of things that are vibrant, exciting, resilient neighborhoods. And you didn't have to have a stadium to be the anchor for that. So that's what I would prefer to see. But I'm also in the situation where if this is going to happen, if we're going to see a stadium, then I've got to drive this to be a better deal than it is today, because it's not a good deal for the D.C. taxpayer. And I don't think it's a good deal for the fans either. I think there's a lot of work that has to happen.
D.C. Councilmember Charles Allen, kind enough to give us a few minutes here on Grant and Danny. So is there anything to be said for the fact that there is a proposal on the table now, instead of kind of thinking down the line of, you know, the idyllic rebuild that you're talking about? I mean, is there any more weight now that this is in front of us?
Well, of course. I mean, that's what I mentioned earlier, right? We're no longer in the world of theoretical right now. We got a proposal in front of us. So my job as the council member is not to think about what would be fun and exciting. Because listen, my ability to, frankly, almost even walk to the stadium on a Sunday for a game, that sounds pretty exciting and pretty fun. My job is to think about this as a council member, as a legislator, as a policymaker, being responsible for how am I going to spend these tax dollars. And I'm hearing from a lot of constituents, a lot of residents with a diversity of perspectives. I got some people that say, listen, I want a stadium. I want the team back. I don't care how much it costs. Build the damn thing. I got another group of neighbors who say, absolutely no way, no how, never. And then I've got a bigger chunk in the middle, though, who say, you know what? Maybe a stadium would be a good idea. Maybe that redevelopment could be something. But this deal isn't it. I don't think we should be spending more than $1 billion in tax dollars to do this. I don't like 8,000 parking spots. The team's not even going to headquarter in here. We'd be the only, they'd be the only Washington team playing in D.C. that wasn't headquartered in D.C. So I'm hearing from a lot of folks that say, listen, this deal has got to change. We can do a lot better, and we're counting on the council to make it a lot better if this is what's going to come down the line.
Politics question for you.
Yeah.
Ward 6 Councilmember Charles Allen is with us. Do you vote based on, like, DC abroad or based on your ward? And what I mean by that is, I saw somewhere that there 71% of DC residents would want the team in DC. I don't know if that's the same numbers you're looking at, but if that's the case, is it as simple as just voting based on your constituents? Like, you'd be going against maybe the vast majority of people, or are you voting specific to your ward and maybe your ward number is very different?
Well, our responsibility is to look at it from the district.
Okay.
So two points on this. One, I was having a conversation with a Virginia representative the other day. I'm not going to tell you who. And he was pretty excited about this.
You cut out there for a second.
What does his name sound like?
Yeah. What is it, Ryan?
No, I'm saying I'm not going to tell you what his name was.
We're kidding, sir.
But he was saying, listen, man, the stadium would be great. I'm really excited about this. And I said, fantastic. How much are you going to chip in to build the thing? And that's where the conversation ended. But when you talk about the poll numbers, right, here's the thing. If I asked people, hey, listen, would you like to have a Lamborghini? I'll bet I'm going to get a pretty high number of people who are going to come back and say, yeah, that sounds great. Let me have it. If I then turn and ask the question, though, so listen, I'm not going to be able to, rebuild your kid's school. I'm not going to be able to build that park. That senior center, we can't rehab or build a new one. The library, you're not going to get that. The numbers will change. So
okay,
when the polls go out and just ask people, hey, would you like it? Of course you're going to get a high number.
Totally.
But the reality is we only have so much money. We are entering a recession. We have 40,000 jobs that have been lost. We have a budget that we're about to get submitted to us in a couple of weeks that's going to cut maybe $800 million from core city services. and then we want to put $1.2 billion into a stadium.
So
I think we're
going to
have very clear choices in front of us.
It's a, it makes a lot of sense. The $1.1 plus bill, whatever, I think you used the number $1.2. $791 million of that's from the capital budget, yes? That is buildings, projects, roads. That's not schools, books, pencils. What am I missing?
No, that's how we build the schools and the libraries. That's how we build all those things. Those are capital dollars.
Okay, so you're saying it's coming from the same place. I was told it's the buildings, the projects, the roads is a different account, so to speak. You're saying you think this will directly negatively impact what you then spend on D.C. schools.
The capital dollars, yeah. So if I have a capital dollar, which is building something, and I'm going to put that capital dollar towards building a stadium, that's a dollar I can't spend
right.
on a school or a library or a rec center.
But that
and obviously,
budget is like
we have a
bill,
lot of competing
right?
demands, but that's how we spread it out.
So that, but isn't that the $10 billion budget? This is like 7% of that?
Or of our total capital?
Something?
I mean, we budget our capital, our capital budget is basically budgeted out to the dollar. So it is significant. So any trade-off it's a trade-off, right? That's what I think we want to be clear with the public and with voters on is these are clear trade-offs we have to decide. And I think, again, I expect I'm going to hear a diversity of perspectives. I'm going to hear some people tell me, this is the right investment. I want you guys to do this. I'll hear others that say, absolutely not. At the end of the day, I've got to see a good deal for D.C., and we're just not there yet.
This is why we like having Charles Allen on. Last one for me.
Yeah.
I heard this. I want to know what you think about this. $202 million in site prep is needed at that campus anyway. Meaning, with or without a stadium, you're paying that. Why couldn't I deduct that from the 1.1 or whatever it is billion just off the top? Because before you do anything, you've got to spend that anyway.
Well, I think you're going to have any number of hypotheticals trying to figure out how to justify such a big number, right? In the same way that I supported us putting money into Cap One, in the same way I supported public investment in other projects, there will be public dollars to help redevelop a site no matter what. And I think that we should be clear about that. I support that. But I have one proposal in front of me, and we got to judge that one proposal. If there's a different proposal that comes forward that also puts that same $202 million into it, I would talk about that as that's also a public investment. But I might see the return on investment differently than a stadium that is going to net 30, 35 events per year.
Councilmember, my last one, super quick. Have you spoken to others of your colleagues who maybe share some of your concerns? And is there kind of a way that there's a middle ground potentially where you and others might say, okay, now this is a good deal for us?
We will see. I've definitely talked with many of my colleagues. I've shared this with the chairman as well. I think he shared it with you yesterday. A majority of the council does not support this proposal as is. It's too much of on the public taxpayer dollar right now. I believe I have several colleagues, though, and I think all of us should be going into this process to try to get to a better deal, try to think through what could this look like. I think that there is certainly room to see changes to the deal that might garner the full support of the council. But as of right now, that majority is not there.
I lied. I have one more, if that's okay. Super Bowl, draft, Final Four, I get you. Those three things were well up over what you paid for the venue, right? Does that work for you? We got a deal or no? I mean, in terms of ROI, you mentioned ROI. Am I wrong about
yeah.
that? The suggestion is you could be upwards of $2 billion on just getting those events.
This public investment alone means that for every home game, D.C. taxpayers are paying $4 million for every home game for the next 30 years. So this is a significant investment, right? If we build a new place, absolutely, of course, we're going to host the Super Bowl. Like that, no one should be shocked or surprised by that. Like that would be part of what happens here. In the same way, when we built the ballpark, we got to host the All-Star Game. It's fun. It's exciting. It generates some revenue that comes in. But compare that to what we could be doing, right? If you can create an arena like we have downtown that has major events pretty much every night out of the year, that starts to create the type of economic return on investment that gets you away from just the one-offs. How many Super Bowls are we going to host in the next 20 to 30 years? Maybe two, maybe three? You need to be able to see something that's going to have a lot of return on investment to justify this huge cost. And so I think a lot of people are going to push back on the total payout and try to get to a better deal.
Congressman Charles Allen on Grant and Danny.
Thank you for the promotion.
Councilmember. You said you called him a congressman.
Oh, councilman. Sorry.
Future congressman.
Yes, that's right. Future. I'll vote for him at this point. I mean, we don't even agree on the stadium. He's my guy. I like Charles.
I appreciate
Allen.
It. I appreciate it, guys.
And seriously, we always like having you on the show. Much appreciated. I'm writing you down. It sounds like as a yes, then. We've got you as a yes.
Soft yes.
In our unofficial polling.
I told you, I can't support this deal as it is right now. I think we have a lot of work to do.
Well, seriously, thank you for the time.
Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. We kept him too long. That's Charles Allen. I called him congressman?
Yeah. You're just
President of the United States of America.
Overlord of the planet, right? Charles Allen.
Charles Allen, POTUS on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Big thanks to Charles Allen for joining us on Grant and Danny. Ben Standing of The Athletic stops by at the top of the hour at 5 o'clock. We'll go over the Commanders NFL draft with him. I always thoroughly enjoy our conversations with Charles Allen. Very, very well spoken, great on air, love talking to him. I guess my frustration at the end of any of those conversations, though, and we're just on different sides of it, which is fine, I don't really believe that whatever they're going to build is going to generate the revenue that this does. And there's not an acknowledgement of that. So when you say, well, we could do this, but that's not bringing people from across the river in Virginia in by the thousands, nor is it bringing people across the river from Maryland in by the thousands. Now, if he wants to talk about, there are gripes that I think are real. The parking thing, I hadn't done any of those numbers, that research, run or calculated that.
Yeah, we're sitting there going, man, it's only 8,000 spaces as opposed to 22. What are the people going to do? And he's like, yeah, that's eight times too many.
Right.
Like, oh, crap.
So, okay, thought of it that way. I could, you know, it's going to be a give and a take, whatever. Uh-huh. I can deal with some of that. But number one, the idea of we're going to do this. How many times have you heard about the affordable housing and the this and that, and it ends up being condos and some girl with a pug is walking down the road and you and I couldn't afford the place if we wanted to at 27 years old. Like, that's what it's going to be, if it's anything. But on top of that, what is going to generate revenue for the city? And at least acknowledge to me that a stadium would do a better job at that than whatever the other things are in terms of jobs, in terms of, you know, tax revenue, those types of things. That's number one. Number two, I guess just my general annoyance on the thing, what I just did, but the idea that it's apples to apples to compare building a stadium and the possibility of, like, well, we could do this with the schools. I'll defer to him when he says it all comes from the same place. It's a $10 billion budget. When they needed $500 million so the Wizards and the Caps didn't leave, that they didn't have, they just kind of found it all of a sudden. Now, we were told you couldn't have the Caps and the Wiz money, but you've done that, and you're finding $1 billion when you need it for this. And it's 7% or whatever it is of the overall budget. I think you could probably figure that out if you wanted to. You know, it's always interesting that you don't have the money to do something when you don't want to do it. And then when you need to be able to, you find the money.
Yeah, I think you said it very well. My frustration as a former D.C. resident, and this is one of the many reasons my family and I left, was I've heard the same rhetoric and promises for my entire life, going from kindergarten through college in Washington, D.C., and then being a D.C. resident in D.C. proper for more than half my life. And, you know, for a while it didn't affect me, but until it did, I've heard that same, this is what we could do, this is what we could do. When my kids' schools needed a new, like a little building, because they're overcrowded. They're in temporary trailers, and temporary became 7 years worth of trailers. And everybody knew the data was the data. You didn't do it. So, like, you've had decades to try to do something. You know what I mean? Like, there's always rhetoric. There's
also,
always
they wouldn't have this land without the Commanders. Does that matter at all?
Yeah.
They would not have gotten it. They've been trying to get this land forever. The football team got them the land.
I guess the point I'm making is, like, if there was all the follow-through, I'd go, you know what? He's got a point. Because the case actually makes sense. Like, 1.1, 1.2, whatever the number ends up being, of upfront public money when you know that the football team is going to get a great deal on leasing the land for $1 a year for 28 years. You know they're going to be able to skimp on some tax, this, that, and then the parking money goes to them. I understand that. Look, if you want to argue for a better deal, by all means do that. You see what I'm saying? Like, you want to advocate for your city and your position, you should. You should haggle and fight tooth and nail and get every dollar back for the public that you can. I don't think that's crazy. But I'm with you that this idyllic thing that, well, wait, you see all the grand plans we've got for this tax revenue that's a common. We have control of the land now. You're going to see a borderline utopia. You won't.
30 years of sitting there as a blight and a rusted. Now, they didn't have the land. I understand that. But you also still wouldn't have the land if not for the football team pulling off the Hail Mary a couple months ago. Now they have it, and you should have a conversation about what's best for business. But, you know, I wonder, and I'm not suggesting I know the answer, what is best? Is it what's best for the immediate neighborhood right there and the people that live there? If that's true, okay, then work back from that. Is it what's best for the city and the bottom line and the number of dollars that's being created in terms of business and opportunities? Because a stadium would certainly be the answer there. I don't know what the goal is, in other words. Like, mm-hmm. What are you starting from? But I just disagree that this isn't a good deal. Is it a lot of money? Of course. You're building an NFL stadium. Again, I go back to what I said yesterday to the chairperson that came on. The estimate is, Danny, if they host a draft, which I think is a lock within 3 years probably, if they host the Super Bowl, which Goodell said yesterday this was the missing piece, and if you were to host the Final Four, now that I've got no intel on, but if you did those three things, it would generate almost $2 billion in revenue. We're haggling over 1.2. That's three events. What am I missing?
Those are often, now I'm not an expert, but having read experts would say, those are very rosy, those economic impact type estimates, and that's not the real profit that a city would be taking home.
Sure, but that goes both ways. Does it really cost $4 million for every game that they're going to have to the taxpayers? I don't know.
I can't fact check that. I got no idea. Yeah.
Ben Standing of The Athletic. The Commanders made 5 draft picks. They didn't trade back. They didn't get an edge. How should we feel? We'll talk to him next on G&D.